Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Fido.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the February 2nd, 2013 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Hey, welcome aboard, everybody, on this Super Bowl weekend, as we spend the next hour talking about our nation's space program and focus today on the 10th anniversary of the day that we lost the Space Shuttle Columbia and her seven crew members. Wayne Hale, our friend and former NASA lead flight director and shuttle program manager, will join us later from his home in Houston and help us remember those days before, during, and after the Columbia tragedy, and perhaps what lessons we would be best to learn from those dark days. On a related note, I hope that you all took time this past Thursday night to watch the PBS film Space Shuttle Columbia, Mission of Hope, and found it as moving and well done as I did. If you missed it, I am told, but didn't have a chance yet to confirm, that you can see it in its entirety streaming on the PBS website, so please be sure to check that out. Again, I congratulate Dan Cohen, the director, and Christopher Cowan, the producer of the film, both of whom were my guests on last week's Space Talk program. You can listen to the podcast of that show by going to WMMBAM.com. Keyword Space Talk and click on the Space Talk archive. Hey, also today we'll check in as usual with the local launch forecast and we'll hear Wayne's answers to my five favorite questions during the terminal count portion of today's program at the very end. As always, we welcome and appreciate any thoughts, questions, or comments that you might have about what we're discussing or anything having to do with our space program. Give us a call by dialing 321-768-1240. Or if you'd prefer to send us an email, the address is spacetalking@aol.com. All right, now it's time for my more or less weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. Friday was the official day of remembrance this year for NASA and the entire space community. At events around the country, in our nation's capital, around the world in places like Israel and certainly here in Florida, people took time to reflect on the losses we experienced related to the Apollo 1 fire in 1967, the Challenger disaster in 1986, and the destruction of Columbia in 2003. That means, of course, that this year marked the 10th anniversary of the day we were forced to say goodbye to the STS-107 Columbia crew of Rick Husband, Willie McCool, Dave Brown, Mike Anderson, Kalpana Chawla, Laurel Clark, and Ilan Ramon. A decade later, a milestone, I guess, in the way that we mark time on this planet, the Columbia disaster naturally became the focus of the ceremony hosted yesterday by the Astronauts Memorial Foundation at the Space Mir Memorial at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. It was a beautiful, clear, and crisp day, just right if you were in the sun, perhaps a little too cold if you were in the shade. I was glad to be in the sun, sitting near the front at the base of all that polished black granite, carved with the names of 24 astronauts who have lost their lives in the line of duty. KSC Director Bob Cabana spoke, as did NASA's Spaceflight Chief Bill Gerstenmaier, former astronaut Eileen Collins, and a few others. A trio of astronauts flew NASA T-38 training jets overhead in a missing man formation, which for me was the most emotionally moving moment of the day. But the inspirational highlight of the event, for me anyway, came when the widow of Columbia Commander Rick Husband, Evelyn Husband Thompson, offered her memories of her spouse, the rest of the crew, and their families before, during, and even after that awful Saturday morning 10 years ago. Now, I happen to know that Evelyn is a strong Christian, and her words echoed her faith as she quoted from the Bible and spoke of how she and the other families have coped through the years and of how they have found unexpected strength and courage to deal with their loss. Her hope for all of us was that in the tragic loss of Columbia, we too would find courage and strength and hope to carry on with the mission of space exploration that we all believe is so important to our future and the future of our children. Of course, on this day of remembrance, as each speaker took their turn, I couldn't help but return my gaze to the space mirror and all of those names, think about the stories that are associated with each of them, and dwell on my own answer to the question that everyone seems to ask on days like these: where were you when you found out? I was too young to remember any live reports of the loss of the Gemini 9 crew of Elliott C. and Charles Bassett, or of the other T-38 crashes that claimed C.C. Williams and Ted Freeman. I remember at some point during my childhood I read about them and recall being surprised to learn there were astronauts other than those that flew in space. My earliest recollection of the Apollo 1 fire came from reading about it in the little school handout called Scholastic News. I remember being confused about the story and the picture because I didn't understand why Grissom, White, and Chaffee were in their spacesuits inside the capsule a full month before the launch. My connection to Sonny Carter, Mike Adams, and Robert Lawrence was mostly as a Florida Today reporter writing about the additions of their names to the space mirror. And while the inclusion of Adams and Lawrence deciding, and with the inclusion of Adams and Lawrence, I'm sorry, deciding that there is at least one other name from NASA history that I think belongs on that mirror, a discussion we'll have to have another time. For Challenger, I was at the press site at KSC covering the launch for the Avion, my student newspaper at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach. I watched Challenger break apart in the sky with my own eyes, and to this day have little desire to watch any video replays of an event I can still so clearly see in my own mind. When we lost Columbia, I was a senior producer at Space.com and was in my office in Port Canaveral, tuned into NASA TV and a variety of other sources, closely following the reentry, my landing story ready to be published online the moment Rick Husband declared wheels stop and I had typed in the rest of his quote. The full stories about what I experienced and the behind-the-scenes media activity on those days that we lost Challenger and Columbia are much more extensive. For Challenger, I could tell you of how I wound up being the one who told Krista McAuliffe's hometown radio listeners in Concord, New Hampshire, that she was probably gone. And for Columbia, how as one of my being only one of four reporters at the Kennedy Space Center who covered the final in-flight press conference, I was among the last persons to have directly talked with the crew. Then there's the Lou Dobbs story related to Columbia and how my sons had to break into my office, a story we'll have to save for another day as well. These memories surface every year at this time, and even as each tale is embellished a bit more with age, the grief and emptiness associated with each loss and each tragedy fades a bit more as time heals all wounds. From disaster comes hope. Hope for a future in which we all find it within ourselves to press on, do good work, and keep the dream alive. That's what I take from what I've heard said during this year's Day of Remembrance. At the ceremony at KSC on Friday, Evelyn Husband Thompson told of the final time the Columbia crew and their spouses gathered together for the launch and how Rick spoke of his faith and how it would guide him as commander during the next 2 weeks. He quoted from Scripture, first chapter of Joshua, saying, where God said to Joshua, "Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Do not be terrified, do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." As we look back, remember the Columbia crew and all the others today and every day. Let us also remember this promise from above and go forward with renewed strength and courage and hope for the future. And that's Orbital Inclinations for this week. Wayne Hale joins us right after we take this first break. I'm Jim Banky, and you are listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Welcome back, everyone, to Space Talk. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to participate in the program. You can also send your questions or comments to me via email. Just send them to spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, my guest today is no stranger to this program. Wayne Hale is a former lead flight director at the Johnson Space Center. He is a former space shuttle program manager, now as a consultant with Special Aerospace Services, and as he likes to note, a full-time grandpa. And if his posts on Facebook are any indication, he's doing a pretty good job at it. During the past few weeks, Wayne has been writing about his memories before, during, and after we lost Columbia and her crew, an activity that unfortunately has put him in the news again this week. Much to his dismay, I'm sure we'll address that in just a few moments. But for now, we welcome back to the phone Wayne Hale from Houston. Wayne, how are you today, sir?
Just great, Jim. Good to be with you and with the Space Coast listeners.
Well, it's great to have you back. And it's a tough topic, Wayne. We know Columbia and dealing with those memories, and I'm so grateful that you came on and are willing to talk about it. I guess before we get into the blog and what you've been saying, how have you been able to mark this day of remembrance this week? What were you up to? Were there any ceremonies out in Houston, or what were you up to?
You know, there were very muted ceremonies in Houston. I know that the senior leadership of the Johnson Space Center went up to East Texas, town of Hempel, where a lot of the debris was recovered. There was a ceremony up there. There was an earlier ceremony on January 24th, yeah, honoring all three crews, and that was at the Johnson Space Center in what we call the Memorial Tree Grove. And certainly I've been by there, but it's been very low-key here in Houston.
Interesting. Well, so let's talk about you started this blog after you retired. In fact, you might have even started it before you retired, as a matter of fact, and carried on.
I started it when I was still working for NASA. They asked me to try out some of the quote-unquote new media, see if we could reach young people. So we did the blog, Twitter, Facebook, you know, everything that we could think of. And post-retirement, I've carried on with it, although I had to move it off the NASA website. Obviously, I'm no longer employed by the government and can't post my things on their official website.
Yeah, which, of course, is appropriate and makes sense and actually gives you, as you know, a little more freedom to say things the way you want to say them. And your stuff has been great as you've talked about your history and your experiences. You a few weeks ago, well, probably a couple months ago, actually, made the decision to start talking about Columbia as we approach this 10th anniversary. Can you talk a little bit about your mindset and what led you to decide to do that and kind of what you wanted to get out of doing that?
Well, sure. I think about 6 months ago, there were several of us retired NASA USA folks, and we started talking about the fact that it was going to be the 10th anniversary coming up this year. And we just started swapping stories. And I had some, and people said, wow, you ought to put those stories, write them down, put them out so people can benefit from that history. And so I started doing that a couple of months later and started writing this down in the blog. And that's the whole origin. Part of my goal was to get it written down before I forgot it.
Yeah, right.
Before old age took my memory away.
That's right.
But the biggest part of it was to put down, you know, here's the lessons we should learn. Here are the things we should and shouldn't do that we learned the hard way from that whole series of events 10 years ago.
Did you find your memory to be fairly fresh, or did you have to do a little research to flesh out any details? Wayne, a problem I have all the time, and when I tell my stories, I can't remember the specific timing and days and things like that.
Well, you know, it's mostly from my recollection. I did do a little consulting. I don't keep a lot of notes. And, you know, mostly I had to go, now, was that, you know, the first week in January or the second week in January?
Right.
Look at the calendar sort of thing. But it was all basically from memory. And so it's only as accurate as my memory.
That's right. Well, okay, so you you talked about the events leading up to it, and I don't want to have you reread volumes and volumes of data, but if you give us a quick summary, the typical answer, where were you when it happened, when did you find out, and, how were you involved?
Sure. I had been a senior flight director in Houston for many years. I was the SN Entry Flight Director for STS-113 in November, the last successful flight, I guess you could say, before Columbia. And had been asked by a shuttle program manager, Ron Dittemore, to take a temporary one-year assignment down in Florida at the Kennedy Space Center to run the office that they called Shuttle Launch Integration office down there. And he asked me to start on February 1st. So coincidence, I had been down and met the office staff and come home and packed my car full of clothes and moved into a new condominium on January 31st, and on Saturday the 1st, I drove down to the firing room and met the launch director, Mike Limebach, and other folks, and we went to the runway, and we were standing out by the runway. So,
well, not a bad job if you can get it up until the day of the accident. I guess we don't have as many restaurants to choose from as you have out there, but it's not a bad place to live.
Great place to live.
Yeah. So all right, so Columbia, we lose Columbia. It doesn't come home. You're faced with kind of an interesting transition. You're supposed to be getting launches ready to go. We're not going to do one. What was next for you at that point?
Sure. Well, in that role, of course, we were key in putting together the rapid response team, sending the folks out to East Texas to collect the debris, and then putting together the forensics in the reconstruction area in the RLV hangar out by the shuttle runway. And that occupied us, that dealing with the investigation, various technical aspects, as well as hosting the Columbia Accident Investigation Board members as they came to Florida. Kept us pretty busy for several months.
Not
the way we expected.
No, not at all. There's so many stories to tell about the shuttle program and that are great sources of material for future TV movies or whatever. Two of the greatest stories that I don't think have still ever been adequately told. One of them, of course, is the one in New Orleans and the ET, the external tank folks after Katrina, and how they kept the program going. But the other one is that recovery effort in East Texas. The number of people that went there and did all that, and how that was coordinated and tracked and GPSed and all of that. I mean, what an incredible achievement that was.
I'm told it was the largest effort of its kind ever undertaken, and certainly there were thousands of people involved over the course of almost 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah.
And it really allowed us to piece together what had happened.
So now you've been writing this blog, and it's been relatively quiet in terms of, we've all in the space community been reading it and talking about it, and then you write about... And actually, it wasn't even the most recent blog entry. It was one a while back, talking about how you had this discussion with some folks after a meeting about what to do if there was damage or not damage. And now it's all over the headlines and all over the world, no thanks to a couple of questionable media sources, in my opinion. What's that all been like for you the last couple of days?
Well, there are plenty of responsible journalists like yourself, Jim, and I've talked to several, and I think we've tried to set the record a little bit straight. Unfortunately, in the news cycle, as you know, there are some organizations that are looking for a sensational story to pump up ratings or whatever it might be. And apparently somebody took a left turn off one of those stories and said some things which aren't accurate. And of course, it got sent all around the world. And I've even been contacted from press folks in India,
really,
who are interested in the story. So
it's
been kind of interesting. Phones rung a lot.
Full-time damage control in the way. So let's address that. You had a meeting. It was you what, weren't for sure that there was damage, or were reasonably sure that you were going to be okay, and then you had this theoretical discussion in the hallway.
Well, yeah, and the reason I related the story was because there was this mindset, this conventional wisdom that was all throughout the shuttle management team that unfortunately even I subscribed to, that if you read the blogs, I referenced other people saying almost exactly the same thing, saying, well, you know, if there really is critical damage to the heat shield, there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
And that just puts a whole damper on the effort to try to uncover, you know, the status. Why should we do, you know, try to get more information? Why should we do a great extensive engineering analysis if, you know, when we find out there's nothing we can do about it, if you find out bad thing, there's nothing we can do about it? Of course, we had come to the erroneous conclusion that all was well, that serious damage hadn't occurred. So we told the crew about that.
Right.
You know, mission control always tells the crew. There's never, ever in my recollection been an instance when people didn't tell the astronaut crew what was going on, at least in summary form.
Right.
And so out in the hall, I had yet another discussion with yet another senior manager who said, once again, well, you know, if it was really badly damaged, there's nothing we can do. And he didn't say it exactly like this, but, oh, by the way, and it would probably be better if we didn't know, because what would we, you know, wouldn't the crew rather have a successful, happy mission?
Right.
Than to know they were going to die.
Wayne, stand by right there. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour break. We're going to take our quick five-minute built-in hold. We'll come back, and then we'll finish this story and talk with more about Wayne Hale about Columbia. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Bankey.
And welcome back, everyone, to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Our phone lines and online inbox are open still for your questions and comments. The number 321-768-1240, the email address, spacetalking@aol.com. Former NASA flight director and shuttle program manager Wayne Hale is with us today to talk about the loss of Columbia and her crew. But before we bring him back, I want to say something quickly about the imminent closure of a business in Titusville that has been part of the space community here for, well, as long as I can remember. The German restaurant Pumpernickel's is closing down for good in 2 weeks, another economic casualty of the end of the space shuttle program. Pumpernickel's has been and is and was the go-to business for catering just about every birthday party, retirement luncheon, conference break, ribbon-cutting event at the Kennedy Space Center and Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. They have been as much a part of the team out there as any launch director, technician, or even astronaut, and their contributions to the space program will be missed. Your last chance to enjoy their German food and hospitality is February 16th, 2 weeks from today. So if you have time between now and then, please do stop by the restaurant, buy one last meal, say thanks, and offer your best wishes to them. Now back to Wayne Hale in Houston. We're talking about Columbia, Wayne. And just before the break, we were wrapping up your story. You're out in the hallway, and the question is basically theoretical. If you had something bad to tell the crew where they weren't going to make it, would you want to do that? And is there worthwhile in doing that? What were you thinking? What were they thinking at the time?
Well, yeah, I think that's not what was the question at all. The question wasn't, would we tell the crew what we knew? We always tell the crew what we know.
Right.
The question is basically, would we want to know?
Okay.
Right? Well, how hard are we going to work to find out the truth here? We've got the answer. It was the answer we wanted. You know, there were some people that were a little unsure about the answer, but, you know, it came back good. Let's leave it alone and go on. And the point of telling the story is not, you know, should you tell the crew, shouldn't you tell the crew? Of course you should tell the crew. The question is, how hard do you try to find out the truth?
Yeah.
And you should never give up trying to find out the truth and work very hard to get the right answer instead of, you know, accepting an answer which turned out to be wrong.
And that is the twist in the line of logic that has made all the news headlines this week, and people are writing about it, and it's good to clear that up. There are a lot of other questions, Wayne, about that incident, that disaster, that have made the online world, even when you read the responses to these stories that have been online the last couple of weeks, people ask about, could there have been a repair made? Could there have been a rescue mission? You've kind of addressed some of those things in your blogs, but let's talk about that. First of all, let's say you did know there was a hole in the wing. Could you repair it on orbit with what you had at that time?
Not in those days. They tried very hard to develop on-orbit tile repair in the late 70s, early 80s, before the first shuttle flight, and they gave up. It was too hard. It was they were failed at doing that. And so the conventional wisdom was, even after Columbia, that was an impossible thing to do. Fortunately, we had 25 years of material improvements and a new set of fresh eyes on it, and we were able to develop after Columbia on-orbit repair capabilities, which fortunately we never had to use.
Yeah.
But there was nothing at the time, no.
I get a kick out of some of the – and I understand it because they're not – I mean, I'm not an engineer, and I still, think I get at least this much. But so many suggestions, Wayne, for example, about, well, why didn't they just take some things out of the cabin and spacewalk over to the wing and stuff what they could and plug the hole,
And a lot of people have suggested that. That's not, a terribly unusual idea. The problem is the heat energy involved would just eat through anything in no time. You're wasting your time.
Yeah.
With whatever we had on board, it would melt it right away.
And not the least of which is the aerodynamic effects and tripping the boundary layer and all these fancy topics that you start talking about that deal with the heat.
Sure.
The idea of a rescue mission. Atlantis was in the vehicle assembly building, pretty darn close to getting out to the pad. Had you known at the right moment, was that a possibility?
After the accident, during the investigation, they worked very hard to see if that could have worked. And given, a recognition very early on in the second, maybe the third day of the flight, if we scrambled, a long shot might have saved the crew. But that was never even in our minds. That to have suggested that, nobody that I know of suggested that we should mount a rescue mission. First of all, we didn't think there was any reason to do anything.
Right.
But if they had have suggested that, it probably would have been dismissed out of hand because we'd never done anything like that. It was very risky to try to accelerate all those pre-launch processes, and it would have been a really tough mission. Having said that, wish we'd given ourselves the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, what about the whole, and I don't know what you can talk about even to this day because it starts bordering on the classified world of our military assets, but the whole question about imaging and the request for images and it was turned down or it wasn't turned down or it was made and then for whatever. I mean, what can you tell us today about that aspect of the story?
Well, I can't tell you what the capabilities are or are not. Okay, that's classified. But I can tell you that many people believed that there was some capability to get some more information. And I was asked the second week of the flight to help facilitate that. And we made a few calls to try to turn that on. And then at the direction of the senior shuttle management, we turned it back off within a matter of hours. So whatever is out there was never used. It wasn't denied from somebody else. Internally, it was thought, again, what's the point? If we find out something bad, there's really nothing we can do about it. So why make an effort?
And, of course, they're the easy questions to answer. Why didn't they just go to the space station and wait it out there?
Well, we could do the orbital mechanic math and do the numbers, but the fact of the matter is there wasn't enough fuel on board Columbia to do that.
Yeah.
It's a good idea, and it certainly was something that we did for other flights that were in the vicinity or headed toward the space station, but not for Columbia.
Another common question, Wayne, it has to do with the reentry profile. Could there have been a different way to fly Columbia, maybe not even try to get to the runway, but just get to a point where you could bail out?
Yeah, no, we were flying about the most benign profile you can fly under the nominal circumstances, so there's not really anything that could have been done that would have changed the situation.
Yeah. In the most recent blog that you posted this past weekend, I guess it was Friday, you detailed, 10 items that you thought maybe were bullet points of things to learn from this. Talk about that summary. What have we learned? What should we learn? And what should we take forward?
Well, I won't recite the entire list from memory, but number one is never give up. no matter what the circumstances are. Number two would be, you know, don't be taken in by the conventional wisdom. Number three, I think, was remain focused on your job.
Yeah.
Do good work. You know, we all go back to the famous Gus Grissom quotation. I like Dr. David Aiken up at the University of Maryland, and he teaches his aerodynamic or astrodynamic students that engineering's done with the numbers. You don't just guess, and you don't wave your arms. You try to do an engineering analysis with the best data you've got. And I could go on down a list, but, you know, the last one is that there is no achievement without taking risk.
Right.
And you cannot let yourself be so paralyzed by concern about failure. While you should be rightfully concerned and vigilant, you can't be paralyzed by it to keep from doing what needs to be done.
The sobering fact is that as we continue to move forward in our space program, whether it's with government programs or commercial programs or space tourism, there will be more disasters. There will be more people that lose their lives in this pursuit. We try to learn the lessons. We try to remember what others have learned in the past and apply those lessons. But again, each time one happens, it seems like it's something we hadn't thought of before. And that's what learning and risk is all about. I guess I'm asking you, would you agree with that sentiment? And then the second question, Wayne, is that as you talk about these lessons learned, is there anything that you're aware of within the NASA community today that, I guess, programmatically required reading or classrooms, or, you know, let's go back and reread the CABE report or go back and read the Rogers Commission report once a year to remind ourselves of what we've learned in the past?
Well, I know my old outfit, the Flight Control Outfit Mission Operations, requires all their new people to go through a training class that certainly teaches all the history, including Apollo 1 and Challenger and Columbia. So I think at least part of the agency is doing that. I know that most of the senior organizations start every weekly meeting with a safety lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are from, you know, the shuttle or space flight, and some of them from aviation, some from other walks of life. So I know there's this concerted effort to try to learn from the past, and I think it needs to continue.
How are you doing these days, and how are folks like Ron Dittamore and Linda Hamm and Leroy Kane and some of those other names that we associate with this story, how are they doing these days with about 30 seconds before our next break?
I think they're doing okay. It's been 10 years. I think we've come to grips with it. You should ask them directly. I mean, I think they'd all be willing to talk to you.
Yeah, how about you, though?
Oh, fine. I mean, you know, it was a bad thing, and there's times that you think about it, and it's causes you to regret what perhaps could have been, but you've got to go on with life.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we're going to take, Wayne, stand by. We're going to take our final break of the day. When we come back, we'll check in with our launch forecast. We'll wrap up our conversations, pose our five terminal count questions to the great Wayne Hale, lighten things up a little bit as we come back after this break. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Bankey.
And welcome back. As we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, with your reminder, you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week. Your first stop, of course, is online on the web, WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, where you can find links to an archive of past Space Talk shows, text versions of our orbital inclinations. You can also follow us online with Twitter at Space Talking, and we have a Space Talk page on Facebook as well that you can like right there. Okay, let's take a look at the local launch forecast. On that note, first, congratulations to United Launch Alliance for their success this past week in carrying out the first launch from the Cape in the new year. The Atlas V rocket flew straight and true and safely delivered its NASA satellite cargo into orbit, a tracking and data relay system satellite, the first in a third generation of these very important spacecraft to our ability to keep contact with our NASA assets in low Earth orbit, including the space station. Anyway, with the Atlas V off the pad, that means that the next launch from our shores is now expected to be a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket with a Dragon spacecraft bound for the International Space Station as part of the company's cargo delivery services contract with NASA. The shot now targeted, if I have the number right, 10:10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on March 1st. As you might remember, the last Falcon 9 launch did have some problems during the climb uphill that resulted in one of its nine first-stage main engines shutting down. Although the investigation into the accident continues, apparently, NASA manager Mike Suffredini said about 2 weeks ago that they have enough information right now to be confident that the Falcon's nine main Merlin engines are okay to go. So it looks like they're counting down for the launch on March 1st as part of the normal pre-launch activity. During the next couple of weeks, we can expect to see that rocket rolled out to the pad for a static test firing at the pad of the engines. If all goes well, they'll roll back the rocket into the hangar, put the satellite on it, and roll it back out and, again, look for a launch about 10 o'clock or so in the morning on March 1st. For more information about these and plenty of other launches scheduled around the world, including another United Launch Alliance Atlas rocket from Vandenberg coming up here in a couple of weeks, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keyword space talk, and look for the link to our local launch forecast. Okay, Wayne Hale, former lead flight director, NASA shuttle program manager, and all-around great grandpa, has been on the program with us today, and we're going to now put him through the ringer of terminal count, our feature at the end of Space Talk, in which we ask, Wayne, we're going to ask you five simple questions to get to know you a little bit better. This is not a quiz. There are no right or wrong answers. Of course, as always, this is not a contest, so please, no wagering. All right, Wayne, here you go. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. What's the coolest rocket?
Oh, without question, Fireball XL5.
Yes. That's great.
You have to be a certain age to know that.
You have to be. That is a great rocket. That has not come up in all of the previous discussions. What's cool about it to you?
Oh, I like the horizontal takeoff aspect.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Of course, if you want a real rocket, I'd have to go with the lunar module because that was just way cool.
Yeah. How can you go wrong when it only flies in a vacuum?
Right.
So, all right, first launch that you saw in person or perhaps it was most memorable to you that you remember?
Of course, I didn't get to see many launches in person, not being from Florida.
Yeah.
But I remember very distinctly watching Alan Shepard's flight.
Do you really?
Way back in 1961.
The first one as opposed to the second one.
First one, yes. The Redstone, yes.
Black and white TV and all of that.
You got it.
Okay, now this might be interesting coming from you. You guys have a lot of access to folks, not least of which astronauts being your friends. What's the most prized space memorabilia that you own?
Well, you know, that's really a tough question. I would have to say I've got a collection of the collages that shuttle flights have, crews have put together.
Yeah.
And I think many people have those, but to me, to have a collection of those with pictures of my friends and their signatures and a flown patch, it's really great, and if my wife will let me hang them in the den, it'll be even better.
Yeah, I have a limited wall space myself. Know exactly what that story's all about. Okay, best space TV series or movie?
Oh, Star Trek.
Original, Next Generation? All of it.
All of the above. I'm not too sure about the latest movie where they rebooted the franchise.
Yeah.
But I go back to the original series.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah, that's great.
Did you enjoy when they redid the special effects and Blu-rayed the whole thing up?
You know, it makes it just enjoyable, but it was never about the special effects.
Yeah.
It's about the people.
The people and their stories.
Yes.
Yeah, the special effects makes it more fun, I think, to watch. But there's still something charming about the old, you know, rubber suits and cardboard and all of that.
Yes, indeed.
Even worse than Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea I've been watching lately on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Moon, Mars, or beyond?
All of the above.
All of the above. In any particular order?
I think we kid ourselves because we get in such big fights about which one should we do. And I think it will naturally fall out if we just make the decision we're going to do them all and provide the resources. Then the order in which we do them will fall out, and we'll get them all done faster,
yeah,
as it is right now because we argue amongst ourselves so much, it confuses the policymakers in Washington, and therefore they don't pick any of them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Do you find that more and more true as you cruise around the pro-space circuits these days?
Yeah, it's still true. I think Norm Augustine said it best. You know, people treat space as if it were a religion. The problem is they're of different religions.
Yeah.
And it seems like we can't come to some kind of a compromise agreement. And the policymakers in Washington, they don't know beans.
Right.
You can quote me on that.
Yeah.
About space. And they're looking for the experts to point them in the right direction. And the fact that the experts are all fragmented means that we don't get as coherent a space policy as we'd like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's room for everybody. Wayne, we're about out of time here with you, sir. I thank you so much for coming on again. You've been a great friend of the program and to me. And it's hard to talk about Columbia. It's hard to talk about these things, but as you've been pointing out in your blog, it's important that we do and not forget. So thanks for being on.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you. And remember those lessons, and let's put them into practice now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, Wayne, go back to the grandchildren. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and we'll talk to you again, okay?
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care, Wayne. All right, there goes Wayne Hale. Just what a great guy. Really appreciate having him on the program all the time and learn so much from him. We'll post a link to his blog, by the way, so you can see all of the writing that he does. Next week on Space Talk, my guest in the studio is going to be Carol Craig of Craig Technologies. Her company is doing some very interesting work here in the Space Coast and is truly embracing the possibilities that are opening up now to those that know as our space program continues to evolve in sort of a post-space shuttle era. So she'll be by anyway to tell us all about it. We look forward to that. In the meantime, I hope everyone has a great Super Bowl Sunday tomorrow. Remember that it doesn't matter who wins or loses so long as the food is served hot and the drinks are served cold. By the way, Ravens by 10. You heard it here first. That's it for now. Space Talk is a production of Mylas Solutions and is brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the op station for our program. As always, please join us next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMNB presents a weekend edition of the Glenn Beck Program. I'm Jim Behnke. We'll talk to you again real soon.